We welcome you back to the latest and always greatest edition of Six Rings and Football Things, recorded on Tuesday, October 1st, 2024. The days are getting shorter, but the podcast, because of the lack of enjoyment in the Patriots games, are getting longer. You got your guys, Fitzy and Hart. He, of course, from the afternoon program on WEEI. And now I, partially or sometimes occasionally of the evening program, but you can always still find me on the postgame show, joining you today for an analysis of a football team in turmoil in the balance of possibly losing their fans this early into the football season. Andy, I have asked this question on the radio with you. I asked it Monday night on the evening program with Mego. I'm sure you got into it a little bit as well. But of course, you also had players like Jonathan Jones, Jacoby Brissett, who continues to be undefeated in terms of his response, maturity, and ownership of the role of being the quarterback of the Patriots and everything difficult and mentor-like that comes with it. But I just want to ask you once again, aside from saying start Drake May, how do we fix this grand issue of the Patriots starting to become incredibly unpleasant, unenjoyable, just plain not fun to watch?
Expand your horizons and look at this as a two-year season. You have to look long-term. I truly believe there is reason for long-term optimism. For example, I think there are a lot of football teams out there right now that the Patriots are better off than, because there's, I'm not saying there's no questions, but the Miami Dolphins are a shit show. Poop show.
Nope. That's fine. That's fine. A poop show. A poop show is when your child is in the car seat, craps themselves, and then it goes through the diaper and up their back, and you're like, how did you crap up your back? It happens. That's a poop show. What the Patriots are right now, even in the face of the record we anticipated they'd finish the month of September with, the gauntlet is over, the first four games are in the rear view. They're a bit of a shit show right now in a number of ways, organizationally, talent-wise, on-field, off-field. They need some help.
But that's the back end of the NFL. That's the reality. When you're the back end, that's why it's a poop show. It's the back end of the NFL. And I think the Dolphins are in that group. I think the Giants are in that group. The Panthers are in that group. But there's reason for hope in New England more so than in those other places, because you haven't seen Drake May. You don't know if he is or isn't. You hope he is, but he may or may not be the quarterback of the future. So the long-term approach, this lamenting of the offseason, the lamenting of spending, the lamenting of no offensive line, those are all real. But I think anybody, and you and I talked a lot about this last spring, and I chastised Adam Jones, the host of the Midday program now on WEEI with Rich Keefe, when he was like, oh, you can turn it around and make the playoffs. I said, no, you can't. No. This hole is much deeper than that. You have to stop digging and then maybe fill in a little bit of dirt and then take a break and realize it's going to take a hell of a long time to get out of this hole. It's like that hole that Bane put Batman in the...
the Lazarus movie. Pit.
Yeah. There's a way out, but it's really, really, really hard. And it's going to take a while. It's going to take some explaining.
Right. I love, A, that you made a Batman reference. And of the three Christopher Nolan movies, it's not the best of the three by any stretch. But at the same time, I'm here for it there, Andrew. Also, you're not wrong, but it's in Bruce Wayne escaping from the Lazarus pit and the hole in the desert, he had to take chances. And I think that's one of the big problems, is that they continue to tell us that there's a plan, and it's a very risk-averse, staid and steady plan that comes with the safe choice of Alex Van Pelt, Elliot Wolf bringing in the Cleveland Packers or the Green Bay Browns method of developing a team. And while you have to trust that you're told to, cross the bridge, trust the process, believe in the plan. I need to know what the effing plan is. And I think right now there's a little bit of distrust in addition to the frustration of just spending so much time and money on Sundays and all week long buying into a team that looks, I'm not going to say trashy, but that looks disorganized and really lethargic on the field.
And I think the root of that issue, in my opinion, on and off the field, is one simple position. It's left tackle. On the field, it stinks. Four starters in 4 weeks. It's the sort of poster boy for an offensive line that's bad as a whole, for an offense that's bad as a whole, that's making everybody's life miserable. But I also think it's also a symbol of what they didn't do in the offseason and what Elliot Wolf didn't do, and making people question Elliot Wolf's ability to do what I'm talking about, do a multi-year plan rebuild successfully. And if he so poorly addressed the left tackle position, why should I trust him with a draft pick next year? Why should I trust him to fill the hole? And those are fair questions. Why should I trust him with $130 million to spend next year? And I believe those are more than fair. Now, I will say the flip side of that is, if I'm going to be objective, I think they are taking the difficult path. I think they are truly trying to do what they believe is right. It's easy to play the rookie quarterback because everybody wants you to play the rookie quarterback. It's easy to sign, to overpay. I guess I shouldn't say easy, but like go get Calvin Ridley, even though Calvin Ridley isn't that good. Does anybody want him after he had one catch for 5 yards? Is everybody lusting after Calvin Ridley right now?
Do you want not only his mediocre wide receiver one production, but do you also want the headaches that would come with a diva overpaid wide receiver one not getting fed the ball enough to satisfy true legitimate alpha wide receiver one needs?
And on the books for 4 years or 5 years at a significant amount of money. They have not done anything to hinder their ability to be good in the future. That's what I would say. They have done nothing to hinder that ability. They haven't thrown too much money at any one problem, only to look back and say, oh, that was a waste of money. We didn't get return on investment there. So I'm trying to remain optimistic. And I think some of it is, honestly for me, I'm the guy that in May said, this team stinks and might go 0-17. So I had literally zero expectations for this team. So for me, when I look at it and go, well, you already got more wins than I thought. You could have won a second game against a Seattle team that looks pretty good. And by the way, getting carved up by Geno Smith is looking less embarrassing by the day. It just looks like Geno Smith's going to have a season for himself.
Yeah, it's like DK Metcalf is back. Jaxon Smith-Njigba has become a thing, and we always knew Tyler Lockett was an awesome slot receiver.
Right. So,
oh, and Kenneth Walker, by the way, we're lucky that we got Charbonnet because Kenneth Walker is a bad man.
Correct. There's definitely a little asterisk next to that game, which is typical of many Patriots games in recent years, but whatever. That's the reality. Okay, they've had a couple bad losses. I expected these to be bad losses. And then I look ahead, the Dolphins score less than you do. The Dolphins stink. You still got two games against the Dolphins, including one this week. I'll take my chances against the Titans. I'll take my chances against... I can't read the comment. You're laughing.
Okay. All right. Your friend Jeff Stenberg, one of our favorites here, watching live on YouTube as we record the latest Six Rings podcast. And this is why it's also fun to listen to the pod and join us live whenever we record, because we're trying to create an interactive Patriots fan community, giving you guys and your frustrations voice. Jeff Stenberg, often a critic of Andy, says, be right back. Gonna go make a double tankeray at 10:30 in the morning. This is what happens when I agree with Andy. You did this to me, Fitzy.
Because I'm always right. You people will learn in the end that Andy is almost always right. And when he's wrong, he's really close to being right.
Mm-hmm. You do have a number of fans, like one Igor McJazz. He comes from a long line of McJazzes. I think it's Dutch Romanian. He says that, you know, this is a rebuild. Drake May is not going to make us a wild card contender. I have a comment on that. Don't rush this. There's nothing to rush into except possibly destroying a quarterback. I see what you're saying, Igor, and I agree with you in part, but you also have to, you need your fans to buy into the plan. And this plan becomes more vague and nebulous by the day, or so it seems. You also have a responsibility. This goes back to Andy Hart's football and sports principle 101.
Get your ass out there and find that effing dog.
Yeah. Make it fun. Entertain me.
Yes.
There's nothing entertaining. Now, Andy, while you said they got one win out of September, which was more than you thought they would get, more than a lot of fans possibly thought they would get from that very difficult four-game gauntlet to open the season, the schedule does loosen up. It laxes up a little bit going forward. But some of these games, like the Seattle game, was very winnable. As a matter of fact, I think they had, for the majority of the game, they had the higher win percentage and they gagged it away. And then, even though the San Francisco game was never really close, you could see that if they had a functional line and a quarterback that wasn't afraid to throw it further than 8 yards, they could have been in that game. San Francisco was injured. San Francisco didn't play anything resembling their best game. So I feel like we should rename this podcast, Two Things Can Be True at the Same Time, because Yes, you should not rush into. We probably shouldn't. Six rings works now. That title ain't changing anytime soon either.
No, we can in stone, baby. In
very, very, yeah, exactly.
Have, whatever you want, paint
laser and laser yeah. engrave it. Go right ahead.
I'm getting a tattoo. Six rings for life.
Belichick would like you to know it's eight, and we'll hear from the former coach.
I'd like him to know
here.
It ain't.
Yeah, it. No, it's not. The boat can be, but the legacy, it's a little different. Anyway. You can want to buy into the plan and understand you need to save for the future. It's sort of like whenever your paycheck comes in or you do a side gig, whatever, maybe somebody bequeaths you money. You can save for the future, but you're also allowed to spend a little now. Right. I'm not talking about on Calvin Ridley or Brandon Ayuk. I mean, just like live a little, have some fun right now. And there's so much future saving. It's like getting savings bonds when you're 6 years old for your birthday. You're like, your aunt is like, you'll thank me when you go to college later, sonny. Yeah, but I want to buy a freaking transformer now.
And a chocolate bar.
Yeah. Or maybe a video game or a bike or a new helmet, something like that. All right. Sure. I mean, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of things you may want to buy. Point being, you can live for the now. You can live in the now while also saving for the future. And it's just very frustrating. Now, to the frustration and the vagueness of the plan, we finally got Bill Belichick to speak at length about the state of the 2024 Patriots. I don't know if there was an agreement or if Pat McAfee said, I can't keep not doing this. So yesterday in Belichick's Monday scheduled appearance on the Pat McAfee show, McAfee asked him about the Patriots and the plan. And old salty Uncle Belichick did very Bill Belichick things. If you guys haven't heard this clip, it's a little bit long, but it's worth sticking around for. Here we go.
Coach Mayo has come out and said, you know, we have a plan. Jacoby Brissett is our starter. He is our starter going forward. You got a lot of Patriots fans calling for Drake May to get in there because of how the season's going. Then you have some Patriots fans saying, behind that offensive line, that's what we want Drake May to do. Have you been paying attention to it all? How do you feel like Coach Mayo is handling it? What do you think is the conversation that should be had about having a plan for a rookie quarterback and either sticking to it or kind of veering off whenever things aren't going as maybe everybody outside the building thought it should go?
Right. Well, Pat, I'll be honest with you. I have no idea what the plan is, so I don't know. I can't comment on that. If Mayo says he's got a plan, then I guess he's got one, and we'll have to wait to see what it is. I don't know, but I'd say there's a number of issues there. One is can't move the ball and can't score. Got a touchdown off of the field goal, on 63-yard field goal, whatever it was. Our field goal, and then got a touchdown off the fumbled kickoff. But, otherwise had a hard time moving the ball. And I don't know exactly what the numbers were, but the amount of time that Purdy had to throw was pretty high. I got to think that in terms of the amount of time before the ball was released, had to be the highest in the league or close to it. So I think there are some pass rush issues there. There are some, scoring issues, and the Joey Sly is a great, that's a great addition for him. They got a good kicker. That's a big upgrade from where we were last year. But I'd say there's some other things that have to be worked out, and obviously they got the protection straightened out. That cost them the game against Seattle on the blocked field goal. But we'll see. We'll see what the plan is. I have no idea what it is.
Okay, I would like to, all right, hi, sir. Yes, Pat, thank you. Nick Stevens, they call me Fitzy, up with PatriotsWEI.com. Can I ask a question of Bill? Bill, so Joey Sly was a great addition. Who did he replace, and how much draft capital did you piss away last year drafting the guy that Joey Sly had to replace? Thanks, I'll take your question offline.
Yeah, replaced Chad Ryland, yeah. No, and you know what I like about this? Bill Belichick is indeed the Mona Lisa Vito of not having a plan. Because I would say he's an expert witness in that area, because when Tom Brady left, he didn't have a plan. When Rob Gronkowski left, he didn't have a plan. When there was a left tackle need, he didn't have a plan. When Josh McDaniels left, he didn't have a plan. So I would say Bill Belichick is an absolute Hall of Fame goat in the area of not having a plan. I think this is a little bit bullying, in my opinion. Wait till week four, wait till back-to-back embarrassing losses to the Jets and the Niners on the road. And this is when Bill Belichick decides to load the gun and come out firing. So yeah. I love Bill when he's like this, because I think this is who he is. I think he's a little bit of a bully, a little bit.
He's a little bit of a front runner at times. Yeah. That's why you would get great Belichick after a win, or when he knew he was heading into a game he felt confident about. But you would get salty Bill, non-communicative Bill, whenever they would lose or he looked bad.
But the reality is, he's not voicing much that's different than fans. He's looking at it from afar, and he's saying, well, I guess they got a plan. I don't know the plan. I hope he has a plan. I don't know what the plan looks ugly right now, because the pass pro stinks, and you know the defense can't stop anybody, and all of those things. So I love that Bill is giving his real personality, and I think people that are seeing his real personality is kind of a bully dink, and that's just it is what it is. So if I'm Gerard Mayo, though, I don't care for it. I'll be honest. I don't care for it. Now, you got to bite your tongue. There's nothing you can say, Gerard. So if you're tempted to say something, as somebody who knows this, sometimes you're better off to just STFU, walk away, be angry, and put that in the back of the old bonnet for when you have a little bit more of a hammer that you can
Okay, see. I know thy works watching live currently on WEEI's YouTube says, hey, what happened in 2008, bud? He had a plan after 12 got hurt for the season. I already replied in the comments, and I would like just to open it up to you, Andy, as well, and the audience at large. That was a loaded roster, and they had a very conservative plan that he and Josh McDaniels, his offensive wunderkind that he was working with, who orchestrated the greatest offense of all time the previous year, put in place. And it worked, and save for maybe two or three plays that went south on them that season, they finished 11-5, for Christ's sakes. They should have gone to the playoffs. That is one of the biggest burrs in my Patriot saddle to this date as well. But you raise a great point, Andy. You've mentioned this before. You've called it one of Belichick's blind spots, his convenient blind spots, that, you know, like they drafted the two tight ends, so they had the ammunition to transition away from Randy Moss in 2010 and 2011 as well, and it worked. And, you know, McDaniels helped put those guys in place with him. And then Billy O'Brien and he worked together on an offense that was, you know, kind of groundbreaking at the time with the Patriots. But these succession plans, how come he never plans for them? And to now just sort of escape and conveniently just like, well, I don't know what they're doing up there. Yeah, well, they're part of it is, Bill, as brilliant as you are, they're kind of cleaning up some of your mess.
As Bill would say, the status is kind of quo. We've been questioning the plan for 5 years. He was in charge of it for four. Now Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf are in charge of it. But we're still questioning what the hell the plan is, how they're going to fix this mess. And Bill created this mess. Bill's drafting absolutely, inarguably created this mess. It created the lack of a number one option in the passing game or any options in the passing game. It created the mess at left tackle. Bad drafting. It created the mess at quarterback. It created the mess that is this team that Gerard Mayo is and Elliot Wolf are trying to pull out of. So it's fun and good for McAfee taking him there, or maybe he wanted to go there. My guess is Bill early in the season said, I'm not talking about the Patriots, because they were winning, because they were playing well. And now that they're not playing well, he's more than willing to talk about it, because I think that's who he is.
Okay, Nick's Coins watching live on YouTube. Come on, you guys. He's still a football genius. He built a great friggin' football dynasty.
I know.
We give him his flowers all of the time.
I think he's in the top 10 for greatest coaches of all time.
I'd say top five, and certainly the best one to ever patrol the sidelines of either the stadium pictured in our visual backdrop now or the new one that's been in operation for 20-plus years as well. Greatest coach in Patriots history, no doubt, and one of the all-time greatest coaches, greatest defensive minds. He is what should be basically, you know, there should be hologram. There should be a Bill Belichick wing and exhibit at the Pro Football Hall of Fame that the Gil Brandt hologram escorts you to. And, you know, as we go more virtual and AI driven in the future, but he made mistakes.
A lot of
those mistakes, you know, I don't want to get into the craft and ego and combating and wokeness and this and that. Belichick made some mistakes in the process. Ultimately, I think they got rid of Bill Belichick, the coach, because Bill Belichick, the admin slash general manager, did himself dirty. And, you know, here they are. That's not to say Mayo knows everything under the sun as to what to do as head coach. That's not to say that AVP is a brilliant offensive mind. As a matter of fact, I think it's a little safe and pedestrian for my liking as well. And yes, I agree with everyone that's like, can I see some pre-snap motion? Can we see some more screens at least? It's so dink and dunk, it's boring as hell.
I said yesterday, you know, one of my dreams, if like you gave me my Wojnarowski option to just take my dream job. It would probably be high school football coach. I would love to. I think it would be a lot of fun. I also think the offense he's running is the basic bitch offense that I would run because I'm not really that qualified or experienced. I haven't, you know, bounced around, seen a bunch of offenses for a while. I think I would be like, run right, run left. Hey, let's play action boot here and throw a little bit. And then the rest of the team would be like, hey, how come we don't do the jet sweeps and the motions and the stuff that other teams do? And I'd be like, I don't know. Maybe that's a good idea. Maybe we should try. Like, he seems ill-equipped, quite honestly. And I don't know if he's just overly cautious because of his personnel stinking. Right. But I actually think it's exacerbating the problem. They need to be better. They need to be better coached. But I also will tell you, look no further than Miami. That guy's a genius, right? That guy's a genius. Mike McDaniel. He could scheme up anything, except he can't, and he hasn't. And ever since his quarterback, actually before his quarterback, I believe they set some kind of record through four games they've never led. And there's some like weird number. They're not scoring. They score less than you. Like all these things. He has two great receivers. He's a genius. He should be able to do it, right? And he's not doing like sometimes personnel in the quarterback position really affect your ability to play offense.
Peter Grant watching live on YouTube right now just came in from the top rope with one of my favorite comments anyone has delivered while watching the podcast live. Bill will never admit Ernie Adams was behind all of his success. Not all of it. That's an editorial note. And put Scar out there as well. Andy, like you just tapped into how we feel in general as Patriots fans, as Patriots analysts, as Patriots people and New Englanders at large. Andy believes that Dante Scarnecchia, no matter how much you praise and laud him, will continue to be underrated in terms of his contributions. My God, to get that man to consult even for just 2 weeks with this sandcastle offensive line, this freaking Wendy's Frosty of a line. And to me, I'm telling you, Ernie Adams was behind so much of what made that, like the generalist, the information, the intel. He's just creepy smart and just used to feed so much good stuff to Bill. Obviously, Bill knew a shit ton, but my word, that's a great comment.
And I agree with the comment, but really in a literal sense, they are behind the success. Like they're behind Belichick. They're part of his posse, a key part of his posse, probably to the right and to the left. But he is still the lead goose. He's still the one out front. And I give him a lot of credit for the success because he deserves the credit. I don't think it's all BS. Every player and every assistant coach telling you how much you learned from Belichick, how smart he was, how much he knew. He was at the forefront of the success, but right behind him was Ernie and Scar. And specifically Ernie, I don't think a lot of people notice this. The new Ernie is Evan Rothstein. He's on a dedicated channel on Gerard Mayo's headset. And there was a situation in the game in San Francisco, I want to say it was late in the first half, where there was a penalty and there was a discussion, do you take the timeout or do you take the 10-second runoff? And you can actually read Gerard Mayo's lips go, Evan, Evan? And he looks down like, where's Evan? Like, do I have to change the channel on my little Bose headset? Because I'm not getting Evan. And I need Evan to tell me what the hell to do here. I do think they're working out those kinks in that relationship. And Evan is no Ernie Adams. More importantly, Evan didn't grow up with Gerard Mayo. They haven't been football besties since frickin' high school and like living in the dorm and dreaming about football and writing up every, like that relationship, even if the intelligence is there and the trust is there, that relationship is going to take some time. And Scott Peters, while we're talking about the O-line struggles and Scar, and I don't know if Scott Peters is a good O-line coach. I can tell you he can't hold Scar's jock and he's not a legend and he doesn't have the cachet and the track record. And I don't know his freaking strike principle that we heard all about. Seems like a bunch of bunk to me. I'm not sure I really buy it.
But you need the talent too. Like there's just not that much. Like David Andrews we love the man. He's definitely playing golf on the back nine, if not teeing off on the 14th hole.
But
as
you don't
well.
Always need the talent. I saw Dante Scarnecchia take Russ Hochstein and Billy Yates and Ryan Wendell and Dan Conley
and Brian Stork and just
plenty
so
of Jags
many.
Off the Steven waiver Newton. Wire yep. and go through injuries and lose guys. And I saw him make it Greg Robinson, Randall, Grant Williams, Tom Ashworth. I can go
Mike
on and
Compton.
On.
Compton. We'll be here all day.
On yeah. and on. So Joe Andruzzi, like the street free agent types who became household names, Super Bowl winners, solid contributors. Earned money, went on to larger. So don't tell me you know, scar road talent. Did he have talent? Sure. But he maximized, he made Matt Light the best Matt Light he could be. And then he would make Russ Hochstein or whoever off the practice squad the best version of themselves they could be. And he made it work.
Sebastian Vollmer, the best version of himself that he could be, even though now he looks like an Iron Man. Hey, real quick, I've had this comment on screen for a minute. I wanted you to reply to it, Andy. Los Talks Pats, best aggregator out there, hands down, does an awesome job. And we love having him here in the comment section as we record another Six Rings and Football Things live on the first day of October. Jacoby yesterday in his interview with you, Andy, said they run the same offense that other NFL offenses run. Did you have to bite your tongue? As much as I know, editorial note from your host, that you enjoy his conversations and that guys like myself admire his honesty, integrity, and toughness.
Yeah, I'm not going to call out every little disagreement I have with a very nice man and guest of our show. There were a couple yesterday. He also said, like, yeah, I asked him about the officiating being annoying. And he's like, yeah, we know as the Patriots, we're never going to get a call. And I'm like, they called but touchdowns back for the 49ers on like three straight plays for fake flags. Like, you're getting calls.
It took Kittle overwhelming a triple team in the end zone to finally score as the refs kept coming up with different ways for the refs Pats
looked at
score.
That and they're like, is there anything we can call here to say bullying on the offense? Yeah. He shouldn't be able to catch like that. Like, what?
Honest to God. Hey, I want to ask you, by the way, Pete, the Animal Austin, a regular here, as we record the Six Rings, said, did you know Joey Sly got drug tested?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
I think Joey Sly drug testing and all these guys that love to put these little, like, oh, I'm getting drug tested this week.
I did something strong on Sunday and now Monday I get a FedEx get a DM.
So there's like 1,000 other players getting tested who had shitty games. Like, it's like gamblers who only post their winning bets. We only care when it's something funny.
How many 7-leg parlays did you hit only 3 or 4 legs, not 5, 6, or ultimately 7?
But you don't show me those. For example, I think we can all agree that other than Joey Sly, Bryce Behringer, and Brendan Schooler, pretty much every other Patriot sucked. Joey Sly is not the only Patriot getting tested. For all I know, DeMontre Jacobs is getting tested today. It's not because he dominated Nick Bosa. It's because some handful of Patriots is getting tested, but the Sly one is the funny one because, you know, it's like Derrick Henry. He might have had random testing this week after he ran for $199 and looks like the freak of the running back that he is.
By the way, looked faster than I've ever seen him.
Well, I saw a tweet that I fully agree with, and I forgot who said it, but Derrick Henry is what happens when elite genetics meet elite work ethic. Like, he's a freak of nature, and then he takes the natural, I'm going to assume natural, takes the natural and maximizes it. And I'm just so glad, because that seems like one of those obvious ones. When he went to Baltimore, it's like, oh my God, that's the perfect fit. And yes, he is on course for a 2,000-yard season right now. Right.
Mr. Miyagi is currently watching on YouTube. No need to drug test the O-line.
Nope. There might be need to test for like other drugs. Like, you guys are so lethargic. Are you on something?
Your C4 spot? Maybe you need to get your C4 friends to drop a couple cases off at the stadium before game time. All right. Just a couple other things and we'll wrap this one up here. A friend of mine called this morning. We were just hashing over the weekend and the Patriots at large. And he said, you know, I feel like there is a very large, we can expand on this. Maybe you'll even get a chance to on the afternoon program. It feels like there's like an oncoming coach and QB crisis in the NFL right now, specifically a head coach crisis. There are far too many non-experienced. The Belichick's out and they were afraid to rehire him. Reed is the last of a dying breed, if you will. There are now so many Sirianis and Steichens and not even Dan Campbell is more a part of, he's more anomalous than the McDaniels and all these other coordinators who are impressed with their fancy. Ben Johnson might be the smartest guy in the world and not just, I'm going to run it because it gave me a football boner the other night, not because of this awesome play design either.
Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to throw it back to go. Bingo card. Touchdown Lions.
Man, do I miss when we used to have fun things like that to watch. And by the way, that is sort of inspired from a 2001 play call, as somebody pointed out to me, from Charlie Weiss, where Falk took a direct snap and threw to Brady. Still a little bit different, but Anyway, these coordinators now are taking over as head coaches. They haven't even been calling plays that long, let alone can they run. It's not just about a fancy offense. Cliff Kingsbury is an awesome, awesome offensive coordinator. He's so much fun when he gets to put together an offense. He's not a great head coach of a whole program. It's so much more different, and I thought you could speak to that.
Well, and I think we're seeing, you know, if you have one, you can win. If you have the other, you can win. If you pair both, you can be really good. And then sometimes the inability to pair both undercuts. Like San Francisco, for example. I think everybody agrees San Francisco has a good coach and a good quarterback. And you pair them together, and they're leading a really good football team, which is overly talented. Kansas City's the perfect example. Hall of Fame coach, Hall of Fame quarterback. But I don't think anybody saw the pairing of Goff and Campbell and said, that's going to be a top five coach QB pairing in the National Football League. Like, it's almost inexplicable. In a way,
he was a dump from the Rams so that they could give Stafford a chance to go win somewhere else. And now he's turned into a top 10 QB,
which is weird because you kind of have the pussyfooting QB who I see as soft as puppy poo and the hardo head coach ex player. And it's like one of those odd couple pairings, and it works so well for them. But no, there is, and it's to me, it's the fast tracking and the dumbing down, the fast tracking of coaches, the fast tracking of quarterbacks, the dumbing down of offenses. It's all too collegiate. It's all too simple. Like even Sean McVay, who was a really young coach, was born, bred, and developed to be what he was. Like he got to his spot through experience. He was young, but his whole life he had been prepared for that. You got a lot more guys, and I saw the comment about Mayo. I mean, it's defense, it's different, but he was fast-tracked. He did not have nearly a resume. You know, Josh McDaniels, his first time around, was young, but he had been a coordinator and a coach of the best offense for like 8 years with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Like, he had a pretty damn good resume. He'd been calling plays for, what, 4 years at the time? So the guys today that never called plays and you're now a head coach and you're an offensive genius because – you worked with somebody, and no disrespect to Alex Van Pelt. He had never really called plays. He was Stefanski's guy. Like the track to coaches is not as prepared as it used to be. And then you marry the same thing with quarterbacks, and it's no wonder that you have some really inept, dysfunctional offenses, teams. And it's, I don't know how you fix it. I don't know. I mean,
great question.
You know, yeah, people get mad at me when I said, I think there should be a rule you have to redshirt quarterbacks. In the best interests of the quarterbacks in the NFL, I think drafted quarterbacks should have to have a redshirt season. I think they'd all be better off. It would be a rule. So nobody's losing out. Nobody's missing anything. It's the same for everybody. You draft Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. They all sit. See them in 2025. I think in the long run, teams and quarterbacks and entertainment, everything would benefit. No one's going to do it. Because they're too, want to see, you know, people, we're learning it now. We want to see the next big
there's
thing.
Impatience. Yeah, there's rash judgment. And
but
impatience.
You'd be better off for it. You might be better off if head coaches had prerequisites. You know how, like, you used to take college classes, and when you're going to sign up in the little book, it says, like, prerequisite, you had to take certain other classes before you could take this class?
Must have taken World History 101 or Calculus 101, yeah.
Right. I think the league would be better off if there was must have been an assistant coach for 8 years before you can be a head coach. Like, have prerequisites, job requirements, right? Everybody who puts out an HR thing, you got to have this, 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 and this. And knowledge of it, calling plays is a prerequisite.
Five years as a copywriter, 10 years as a programmer, worked in HR for, exactly, as
we
opposed to just
that.
Like, no.
And the product, now, the product, we're talking about this 4 weeks into the season. Maybe the product will turn around. But the lack of coaches and the lack of quarterbacks and the lack of offensive linemen right now feels like an issue in the National Football League in regards to offenses. I will say, last night there was a little uptick, certainly in the Lions game, and we've seen a little uptick in some other games, and we'll see where offenses go as people settle in. But the flip side is, an offense is supposed to be one of the best in football by a genius coach in Mike McDaniel. Looks like they're ripe for the picking for your New England Patriots, that you people should be talking yourself into the upset possibility this way. And I don't even know. I haven't looked at the line. I don't even know if it's an upset. It's two bad football teams playing in Foxborough.
Oh, that's, you know what? I was saving that up for the preview podcast. Right now, let's see, at VegasInsider.com, the Dolphins are a 3.5 point. These Dolphins, with Snoop Huntley coming in, 3.5 point favorite. And, you know, I got people in the comment section saying like, oh, yeah, you know, Mike McDaniel got off to a great start. They look good. Yeah, but then they get to the playoffs. You need to find a defensive coordinator that Mike McDaniel can share the growth of the overall program.
Forget a defensive coordinator. His offense blows right now, and he's got two top 10 wide receivers.
How about that? Last question, Andy, on the books, because I know we could go all day, but you have a four-hour radio show to do. And then I'll do one later.
After I'm done carrying you, I got to go carry Arcan for four hours. Hey,
yo. By the way, I love last night. Somebody was like, hi. Yeah, when I was hosting on EEI, somebody was like, yeah, hi, Mego, Christian. Great to have you guys. So the entire rest of the time, I was like, yeah, it's me, Arcan.
Why does that happen?
Do people listen? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? All right.
Jesus.
How much of a positive, this is from actor Tao, whatever the hell his name is, some guy watching on YouTube now. We appreciate the viewership. How much of a positive effect do you think Bourne could possibly have on the offense if he returns this week?
Andy Hart, WEEI.com. Does he play left tackle?
See? Honestly.
No, I mean, he's probably their best receiver, so that should help. Oh. But he's also coming off an ACL, which we all know guys take a while to come off an ACL. And you told me that the Patriots.
That was the original posted line. I guess it is in the last couple of days, it has turned. Wow.
They watched the Dolphins last night and how much Huntley blows.
Oh, that game was putrid. That was a putrid. Well, the other game at least provided a little pigskin pizzazz. That game was awful.
There was a play that I watched. I didn't watch a ton of the game, but I watched Tyreek Hill absolutely smoke Sneed down the sideline. Mm-hmm. All Huntley has to do is throw it out. It's a touchdown. I don't know what it would have been, 40, 50, 60, 80 yards. It was a long touchdown. He underthrew him by at least 10 yards and allowed Sneed to break up the pass. And you could just see Tyreek Hill like, oh my God, I can't believe this is my life right now. I need a high school court. Yeah, I could go get my Joey from Miami-Dade High School and he could have completed that pass and Huntley couldn't. It's bad. It's bad.
I'm gonna say right now, I'll get back into it when we do the preview pod in a couple of days. Pats money line in the under Sunday, and that you will feed. Last weekend, I bet the Commanders game over. I should have bet Commanders over and also the over in Lions Seahawks. I had a good feeling about that. Like, just listen to your gut, people, and it'll feed you for a while. All right, Andy, great podcast today. You got a radio show to do. We'll be back on Thursday with a preview edition of Dolphins at Patriots. This has been the latest Six Rings in Football Things, brought to you by your friends at WEEI Odyssey and 2400 Sports. Every now and again, I find a clip that I feel like is worth sharing both for the live audience and the audience at home. Andy, feel free to grab this and run with it on the afternoon program as well. I played the Lions play. It was a great play design. It was exciting to see exciting football and fans cheering for points again. I don't think anything all season, Patriots and beyond, will be as electric as the Japanese call of the final touchdown in Saturday night's thrilling Alabama victory over visiting Georgia.
Wow. That's something.
We'll get back there again, friends. We'll get back there, and we'll be here to support you all the way until we get. That was a scorgasm. That was legitimately. That was absolutely scorgasmic. All right.
That was better than a Spanish goal call or whatever, Mexican goal call. That was phenomenal.
That was really something. We'll get there again. One day we'll hear about unicorns and show ponies and wondering where the beef is. And until then, Fitzy and Hart are with you here on the Six Rings and Football Things podcast. Goodbye, everybody.